Psalm 139. To the choir master, a psalm of David. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways, even before a word is on my tongue. Behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I'm still with you. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O Lord, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
Thanks for reading, Tom. Hello, everyone. Isn't this fun? The last psalm of the summer, Psalm 139, as Tom said. And as Tom Bernardo also mentioned on Sunday, University CU Events Weeks, he mentioned them, and there are most definitely some better and some worse Events Weeks year on year. And it actually got me thinking back to a rather good events week we had at the second year of my time at Oxford Brookes. If you don't know the university, it's the rising star of ex-polytechnics. Outstanding. And in the centre of campus is this massive grass-raised square. It's probably about half the size of this room, if I had to say. Well, in this specific year, we'd managed to convince the university to let us place a massive marquee on this grass square, slap bang in the middle of university. It became the hub to which we hosted all of our events, and we talked people through the person of Jesus. It was astounding, it was fantastic, and it's safe to say the university didn't let us do it the next year. But this week really struck with me, because in the middle of university, in the middle of a cohort of young budding students planning their degrees, their first jobs, their climb up the corporate ladder, their holiday home, their pension, there was another group of university students shouting that there was someone else that should lead their life. Someone far more consistent and far more certain. Shouting that there was a personal, loving God who knew you and who had made promises that he will be with you throughout this life and into the next. As I said, it was a great time. And yet, how quickly can the excitement of this news fade? How quickly can we suddenly be caught up in just the same things as those university students? You know, that climb up the corporate ladder, that retirement plan, that pension. Well, King David, I believe, is giving us the antidote for this problem in this psalm today. helping us keep God as the leader of our lives. And if you take nothing else away from this evening, I hope you'll see two hopefully clear and simple points. So firstly, God knows you, and secondly, God is with you. And following these points, I hope you see that we should react in the same way that David does in this psalm, closing in prayer in verses 23 and 24. If you have a look down with me, just at the very end, flick that page back over. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Well, with that in mind, let's dig into our first point. So point one, God knows you, verses 1-7. David opens this psalm painting a picture of a God completely in control. With the modern pace of life, it is all too easy to think of God as someone that's there for us when we need that extra little pep. You know, when things are really hard, when times are trying, when there's an extreme disaster, God's there, you know, to keep us going, to spur us on. Well, David paints a picture of a very different God. Look down to verse 1 with me. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You see, the God of this psalm is not an occasional God. He knows everything about us. From when we first log on to our work emails at the start of the day to those after-work drinks with colleagues. God is always with us, and he intimately knows us. But even more than intimately knowing us, he knows our thoughts. David continues in verse 2, you discern my thoughts from afar. The picture David is painting here is of a father with a white knuckle grip on his child as they cross the road. This is a father that so intimately knows his children. He knows what they do, what they think, and he even knows what is to come for us. We see this last point in verse 3. You search out my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways, even before a word is on my tongue. Behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You may or may not have noticed, but David's now actually used all three aspects of time. The past in verse 1, God has searched and known us. The present in verse 2, he knows when we sit down and rise up. And the future here in verse 3. God knows us so well, he knows every aspect of our lives to come. This is a God where the 10-year plan just is not appropriate. God knows every twist and turn in our lives. He knows what we've done, what we'll do, and even say. I don't know about you, but when I first started thinking about this a month ago, my initial reaction to such news was one of existential dread. God really knows all of that about me? He knows all of my slip-ups and all the things I wouldn't dare tell anyone else? I think it's a perfectly normal reaction as a part of fallen humanity. However, in verse 6, David has a very different reaction to the one I've been having for the past month. If you ever look down with me, verse 6, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain it. As I said, a very different reaction, celebrating how intimately God knows him. But this all pivots on what we find in verse 5. Again, look down. You hem me in behind and before, and lay your hand before me. David was living in a very different time. This much was evident, as I was decidedly perplexed when David was referencing God as the best tailor in ancient Israel. But no, in ancient times, to be hemmed in was to be surrounded on all flanks. Think back to Game of Thrones, a couple years now, but the beautiful setting of King's Landing. If you haven't watched the show, it's the capital of the land, an almost impenetrable city surrounded by gigantic walls protecting all its occupants. The city Dubrovnik in Croatia is actually where they filmed most of the scenes, and you can walk on the ancient walls. They run uninterrupted for 1,940 meters, encircling the city, and they reach a maximum height of 25 meters. There was no better protection in the days of David than to be encircled on all sides by meters of mortar and stone. And what David is saying is that God protects us in just the same way as we go through life. You see, this is not a God to fear because he knows the deepest and darkest aspects of our lives. This is a God to be adorned with wonder because he so intimately knows us and protects us as we go through the chaos of life. He really is the white-knuckled father crossing the road with his children, making sure they're protected from harm. David is celebrating in verse 6 because he knows this, and therefore he knows he does not need to worry. He doesn't need to worry about the future. He knows that whatever will be thrown his way in life, God's sovereign hand is over him and guiding him. I don't know about you, but as an occasional pessimist, after reading these verses, I can't help but think if there's a chance we're able to slip from this father's sovereign hand. Now, I can't help but think if there's something I could do or say that means I go down a path that God didn't plan for me. You see, I know in practice, the very idea of slipping out of a sovereign father's hand is impossible, but I can't help but feel that sometimes it's an imminent threat, an imminent danger in my life. Well, this brings us to our second point. God is with you, verses 7 to 18. And David opens in verse 7 with the very same question. Is there a place we can go that escapes from God's path? Is there a way to flee from God's presence? David then puts this theory to the test in verses 8 to 12, and he really pushes it in these verses. Look down to verse 7 with me. Where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. So David really covers all of the bases in these verses. And what we can take away is that there is nowhere, geographically or spiritually, we can go to escape from our sovereign Lord's hand. From the most distant parts of the ocean to the very corners of this planet, his sovereign hand is over us. Even making our beds in Sheol, I don't know about you, but the very idea of this is chilling. And yet, how many times do we feel like we've messed up and made some of our bed in the very last place we want to be as Christians? And yet, throughout that, his sovereign hand is over us. I think we so often don't remember this because we place a limit over how far God's sovereign hand will go. But again, in verse 12, we see, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. There truly is no limit to God's guiding hand. There is nowhere we can go in this life that God cannot guide us through. And in verses 13 to 16, we see why. From before we were even a mix of cells in our mother's womb, right up until our last moment on this earth, God intimately knows us and loves us. Look down at verse 16 with me. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them. God has every aspect of our lives known and planned. before we've breathed a single breath of life on this planet, God knew what the entirety of our lives would look like. So, of course, there is nowhere we can go without our Creator. This is the Creator of the universe, so no matter where we go, what we do, we're always within the remit of His control. No matter how badly we mess up or feel lost, our name is in His book, and we are well within His plan. Verses 17 and 18 show what that means for David. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I'm still with you. David is excited, and rightly so. This is the most freeing thing we as Christians can understand about our lives. God knows our entire life, and God's in control. We are set free from the expectation of making and executing that 5, 10, 20, 50-year plan, and no matter what our lives shape up to be, no matter what disappointment or sorrow we face, we are safe in the knowledge that God already knows all of it and God will guide us through all of it. So, we know we have a God who is with us, and we know we have a God who so intimately knows us, He will never let go. Well, what does this mean for us in practice? Well, finally, and more briefly, we'll look at verses 19 to 24 to see how we'll apply all of this. Unsurprisingly, David's understood the first verses. He did write them. He knows how great it is to have God's sovereign, caring, and loving hand guiding his life. And that is why he closes his psalm in this way. Let's look down to verse 19. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. O men of blood, depart from me. They speak against you with malicious intent. Your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with complete hatred. I count them my enemies. Now, isolated, it can seem that David's coming on a bit strong here. But in light of what we've seen in the earlier verses, I would argue David's reaction is completely understandable. He knows how great it is to have God's loving, guiding hand. So of course he's frustrated and angry at anyone that would oppose and fight against this. The tenacious anger we see in David here is because he completely gets how wonderful God is. How wonderful it is of him to offer his guiding hand to us. A full picture of how great God is leads to a full picture of how truly horrific his adversaries are. And in light of this, we see David's closing prayer as completely understandable. Look down with me one last time, I promise, to verse 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. David's prayer is one that is desperate to be different. He sees how great God's sovereign hand is. He sees how awful it is to oppose God's sovereign hand, and he knows what side of history he wants to be on. David asks what I would argue may be one of the most dangerous prayers a Christian can make. He asks God to search his heart, to reveal where he's living for his own life. He asks God to reveal what our hearts are really putting in control of the future. In your time together now, I'd ask that you really think about this prayer, really mull on how incredibly brave it is, because David's asking God to take the reins, to lead him in the way everlasting. It is a prayer that, if prayed by ourselves, could lead us to living very different lives. But as we've seen, there's no one more qualified, no one that knows and loves us more, and no one that's in more control than our loving Father. So why wouldn't we place him in complete control and pray for our hearts to be changed? Why wouldn't we release fears and anxieties about the future and focus on being led in the way everlasting? And this is why we can stand in and amongst a world planning their careers, their climb up the corporate ladder, their holiday homes, their pensions, their retirement plans, and we can let anxieties and fears subside. Just like David can pray it confidently, knowing that God knows us and is with us, and that by following him, we are being led in the way of the everlasting. Well, thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure. Now time back to your groups for the closing questions. Cheers.